Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What say you, Richard Ellett Murdoch? Are you guilty or not guilty of the felonies wherein you stand indicted?
Not guilty.
How shall you be tried?
By God and my country.
The exact time when Paul and Maggie Murdoch were murdered.
At the end of the investigation, it was obvious.
I'm not here to work with them, okay?
And the whole point is to have this not fall into the wrong hands. This case is unique, it's unprecedented in South Carolina history.
You encouraged her to go to Moselle.
I did.
Was that the last time you talked to her?
Yes.
Emotional testimony today in the Murdoch murder trial. Heartbreaking testimony that we heard from Marion Proctor just now. We're going to hear more from her. She's the older and only sister of Maggie Murdoch. They were extremely close, according to Marion. We heard her testimony as well as her husband, Bart, got up on the stand. Before we get to that, I want to share with you some information that we've just learned, which is about one of the lead SLED agent for this investigation. We're coming to the very end of this prosecution's case against Alec Murdoch, and it's time to start connecting the dots and hearing what's going on. And we understand right now that testimony from that SLED agent could be delayed because of a death in the family. So we're thinking that it could be back on track as soon as tomorrow. We're going to have to wait and see, but that is a critical testimony that we have to hear from sort of the head of the SLED agency. Now, with me tonight, I have my exclusive legal analyst for CIV and Unsolved South Carolina podcast, The Murder, Money, and Mystery, Mr. Charlie Condon, and he is also next to executive producer Drew Tripp, and behind the controls tonight, running the board is Maxwell Harrison, our chief photographer. He can also field some questions for you if you are listening to this live and have some burning questions, need to know some answers before we head into tomorrow's trial. So let's talk a little bit about what happened. We know that the lead SLED agent's going to possibly be delayed a little bit. Is there anything to discuss about this right now, or do we just kind of hold tight and hope that, you know, unfortunately it did stop testimony today, didn't it?
It changed the order, I think, clearly, and he is in our his family, thoughts and prayers. And it's just life goes on with a long trial like this, and things happen that are unfortunate. So, as I've said, he's in our thoughts and prayers, and his family is, and I think we all feel the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. It's we've only seen him, you know, literally in front of me this whole time. You know, where I'm sitting on where my media seat is, basically, he is literally one pew in front of me, and he's been the one sort of holding all of the evidence boxes. He's the one that has been, you know, sort of handing things to the prosecutors. This is, by all accounts, certainly his case to be testifying on. Yeah. So we're really hoping that he gets a chance to connect some of these dots for the state's case. Now, I want to go back to Marion Proctor's testimony today as well. That was so compelling. You heard the first part where she said, and you could hear the pain in her voice. There were times that you could see that the jury was visibly shaken by hearing what Marion had to say. Let's go ahead and pull the clip real quick so we can hear a little bit more from Marion.
We were afraid. We didn't know what was going on. My family was scared. I was scared for Alec and Buster. I felt like they needed protection. I think everybody was afraid. And Alec didn't seem to be afraid. I did at one point ask him if Maggie had suffered, and he assured me that she did not. And then later I asked him, I said, Alec, do you have any idea who's done this? I said, we have got to find out who could do this. And he said that he did not know who it was, but he felt like whoever did it had thought about it for a really long time. After Paul
and I, that was just the most eerie thing,
wasn't it?
Yeah. To hear her saying this. And knowing how close the two of them were, what did you make of this testimony?
Powerful testimony. I do think the emotions were very raw in that courtroom. And the jurors, of course, had gone through yesterday with the autopsy photos, and they had them again this morning. And then they had this later this afternoon. It was just, I think people are a bit drained by it all because of the raw emotion. But she was an important witness, I do believe, for the state. Overall, there are a few things the defense got out, but basically from the state standpoint, this is the first time you had someone from Maggie's family there. Mm-hmm. And that changed, I thought, the dynamic of inside the courtroom. And then what she had to say, she also had to say, in addition to that sound clip, she also, which I thought was very compelling, she said that the defendant's main motivation after these murders was not to find the killers, but was to clear Paul's name. Which I thought was hard to think about that, right? Your wife's been murdered by a someone you don't know who that might be. Your son's been murdered. You would think all your energy would be in bringing them to justice. Mm-hmm. Flipping that around, if the state of South Carolina is wrong and this case is not founded, you're also being prosecuted. You're an innocent person sitting here in Walterboro, South Carolina, being accused of what you didn't do. So it's a double travesty or injustice that way. So I thought her putting in that timeline that when she was dealing with him, that he wasn't worried about catching the killers so much. He was worried about clearing Paul's name. That I thought was a strong piece of circumstantial evidence. What do you think, Drew?
I agree. I think she by far has been the state's most powerful witness to date. We can add a little bit more context to some things, what you were just mentioning. First of all, when we played that soundbite a minute ago, we edited that down a good bit for time. I'm sure if you were watching along with the trial, you realized that. One of the things that she said in there was that she asked Alec if Maggie had suffered, and he said she'd not, but then she paused, and we didn't play this, but she paused and said, now she's not so sure. And more throughout listening to her testimony today, you could tell the doubt has long since set in for her, mm-hmm. and for it would seem her side of the family, Maggie's family. There's so much with the context to add. We learned today she's the one who told Maggie to go to Moselle.
Mm-hmm. That was the first thought that we played.
Yeah.
That she had encouraged her to go to Moselle.
And I'm really, there's so much.
She felt guilty about that. Didn't you feel it? And
very much
so. It's so unfortunate she feels that way because, you know, why would she not encourage her to do what she did?
Well, and it was, she encouraged her because the story that we've heard all mm-hmm. along is that Maggie indeed was asked to come, as was Paul, to Moselle by Alec, and that Alec didn't like to be at Moselle by himself. And now Alec was dealing with his dad going into the hospital and all of this drama going on with his own parents.
Oh, yeah, that was another point from the state. Remember the testimony about that she encouraged her to go because the thinking was that they were going to visit Alec's parents, right, at Almeda.
Mm-hmm.
and she didn't go there, right? And so the defense tried to explain that in cross-examination, which I think was somewhat effective, in that that Sister Murdoch had gone to the hospital, so therefore she didn't particularly like visiting the, the in-law with Alzheimer's. So they tried to temper that a bit. But I thought that was powerful, though, that there was a change. She thought she would be at Almeida, didn't go that day, and said she was murdered that day.
Yeah, that was very, I think that was one of, I mean, she didn't say it was one of her red flags, but it certainly seemed like that was one of the things that was casting doubt into Marion, you know, early on. And then the fact that when she kept on asking, you know, are you looking for the killer? Like, what are we going to do about this killer? Where is the killer? And then he's like, well, we're going to really be able to clear Paul's name now. And she's like, wait a minute.
That's
we've got a killer on the loose. And she's so worried about the safety for Buster, too. It's not just about Alec. It's just a... This is a horrific situation.
Yeah, right. And to jump forward a little bit, what's interesting about this is that then she became disabused of believing Alex because of the roadside shooting. Remember that testimony?
Oh, yes, yes, absolutely.
And so where we stand now in the trial, which to me, from a legal standpoint, is fascinating. Judge Newman, wisely, because I think this is a critical decision he's got to make, is the state wants to put in evidence. I don't think they particularly want Eddie Smith to testify, but they want to put in evidence of the roadside shooting to paint the fuller picture of Alec Murdoch's motivations. The defense is objecting really strongly because this happened months after the killings. So how could this be a motivation for murder? And I think Judge Newman, he continues to impress me. He's taking his time. He's hearing arguments in the morning because we're at the point in the trial now where I do think it's wise for the trial judge to be thinking about the overall record here. He's let in a lot of financial crimes evidence to prove motive. He did disallow the claim of Maggie being talking about infidelity some 15 years ago. So I think for the first time, correct me if I'm wrong, he's ruled in favor of the defense, held out evidence. And so now this other broader issue is before him, and I think he's wisely recognizing that this trial can spin out of control a bit unless there's some clear thinking from the legal standpoint. And I'm not saying he should rule one way or the other, but I do think he's wise to really look at this and carefully consider it because it's a close legal question in my view.
Charlie, would the legal principle we've heard so much about so far, res gestae, would that apply to the roadside shooting? Because
explain
you
can res gestae.
The whole story, am I right? Res gestae broadly means the whole story. And Dick tried to say today that you can't have motive after the fact, but...
Yes, that's... I think if he allows it in, he's going to use that as an additional... I think res gestae, it's thing done. I believe that's what it translates from Latin. And it typically had been used, my understanding, where it's more immediate. And of course this is way after the fact, but I think where Prosecutor Waters was coming from is you can't really explain his actions without knowing the full picture, and the full picture being that this man uses acts of violence to take attention away from himself. Now some would say, well, that's such a stretch because acts of violence, I mean, here you're, it's one thing to have a botched assisted suicide, it's another to be killing your son and wife to divert attention. But there does seem to be a symmetry there that is appealing, I think, to the state. But I think what's troubling the judge is, well, the symmetry sounds good, but it's months afterwards, and I've let you have days and days of financial crimes for which he's not on trial, which is to prove motive. So what's... Remember, there was some discussion about that. Where do we get off this train and
get a verdict?
What's the exception here? Is it motive? Is it pattern? Is it intent? And so far, he's been under the motive. And I think... We'll see what happens, but I think he may be thinking, I've let this go a good ways here now. Let me be a little bit careful with this next decision. And if he allows it in...
And you're talking about the roadside shooting.
Roadside.
The botched suicide attempt.
Right. Oh, you know, it's all
Yeah,
all
so it's all together.
And then you get the drug
stuff.
Just
so people know, like, we're talking about that Labor Day botched suicide attempt, that his...
Assisted suicide.
Assisted suicide attempt. You know, along with his alleged longtime drug dealer, Curtis Eddie Smith, who's sitting in jail in Lexington County on charges right now.
And doesn't look like he's going to be testifying
after
all.
Doesn't look like he's going to be testifying. We do have a clip. Max, can we pull up that last clip about the roadside shooting to explain a little bit about what they're talking about? Kind of skip over one of our clips? Because I think it does kind of speak to...
Oh, it does. I mean, the whole... factual pattern here is
okay, great.
Amazing.
Yeah, Max has got it for us. Let's hear what this is what we've got it butted up against each other, the defense and the state, I think.
Be good. Yeah, this is good.
He didn't do it, and I think they will concede he didn't do it to get some sort of sympathy. He did it to be dead. That's why he did it. And unfortunately, Eddie Smith, at 4 feet, couldn't shoot somebody in the head and kill him. He meant to.
What is important, Your Honor, is that it's in reaction to the confrontation with Chris Wilson about the Ferris fees that came to the head on June 7th, 2021, and it's about what the defendant said, that he was attacked by an unknown assailant as he was trying to change a tire and went so far as to do a composite drawing, and it created the effect, as this investigation had gone on, that, oh my gosh, the real killers are back to finish the job.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Yeah. There you go.
Wow.
I mean, you know, that's the defense and and Creighton Waters. You heard Dick Harpootlian, and then you heard Creighton Waters. And this was not with the jury present. This was at the end of the day. And the reason we're talking about this right now is because if they open the door, which is what Judge Newman's been talking about, saying, you know, he kind of both opened the door on this at different times. One person's talked about him taking pills. One person's talked about what happened in September with Marion Proctor. It just, you know, it just keeps on snowballing.
Snowball is a good word. And of course, we did have the little detective testimony from Marion Proctor, right?
Well, and we have that as well,
which is reference to drug usage and watching his father not use illegal drugs. And so,
It worried me on so many levels when I heard that. Didn't it worry you? Like, you're like, wait a minute, Paul Murdoch, the victim of this brutal murder, used to go look for pills from his dad? Is that what?
To make sure he was on the straight and narrow.
He was on the straight and narrow?
Yeah.
So was this a family, a family secret that this has been... This has been brewing for a while, this whole pill thing? Mm-hmm.
And from a legal standpoint, I think where Judge Newman is, he let the financials in. He's noted that the defense has also, along with the state, has had reference to drug rehab or drug usage. Now we have the little detective testimony in relative to Paul. And so if he goes with letting the Eddie Smith testimony in, wow, where does it stop? So I think that's where we are from a legal standpoint. Close
Max,
legal
do you want
questions.
To play that little detective for us so you can hear what Marion Proctor said on the stand?
If there were pills in the house that his dad was taking that he wasn't supposed to, Paul was determined that he would find them.
Well, you know what's really telling about that? Or the really interesting inside baseball look at that? If we'll remember back to early in the trial, there was a sled interview with Alec Murdoch on June the 10th. And in that sled interview, June 10th, Alec Murdoch told them, Paul was an intuitive little guy. He was like a little detective.
That's he did not.
Right. Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
Yes, he did. And that's where that nickname came from.
Wow.
And to hear that nickname, Little Detective, was given to him by his mom because...
Wow.
He was looking for pills.
Wow.
One thing that we heard at the beginning of Marion Proctor's testimony, and it, you know, this isn't about me, this isn't about any of us so much, but to give a little insight into it, she said at the beginning that Paul was misrepresented in the media, and I think we're hearing largely from everyone who's talked about Paul, whether he was driving the boat, whether he wasn't driving the boat, whether he did have an alter ego when he drank too much or was partying too hard, and who doesn't have that alter ego. As I've joked before, I think I'm the funniest guy in the world when I've been overserved. And my wife and a lot of people in my life will tell me, you're not so funny, bud.
And you're also invisible, too, right?
Yeah. that's an inside joke for everyone. Again, not trying to make light of this, but Maggie saying that Paul has been misrepresented and that he's such a sweet little boy. Mm-hmm. And again, not to make this about myself, but to give a bit of an insight. A child of an addict, the child of an alcoholic, an addict in general, and you grow up in an environment like that, you can make, you do things. It would not be entirely unprecedented for a child to go and pour out the liquor bottle or dump the pills down the drain and to play that protector role. Cause there's a lot that you can psychoanalyze with it. It's a self-preservation. You're trying to increase stability in the home. You're trying to protect yourself. And at the end of the day, Paul loved his dad, I'm sure.
Well, it sounded like
that. There's so much that was such an enlightening bit of testimony as to who Paul Murdoch was in the life, to me anyway, who Paul Murdoch was and the life he lived. And why would Paul need to be a little detective? Because it says to me, it says a lot about Alec and who he was behind closed doors.
Yeah. Yes. There was a lot going on in that household, and we just barely got to scratch the surface today with what Marion was telling us. It was stuff that we wanted to know. We kind of wanted to hear from, possibly even from John Marvin and Buster and Randy, you know, to some degree, to like kind of let us understand what was going on. Max, you've got a question for us, don't you?
Yeah. Going back to when Dick Harpootlian was talking about the incident on the roadside, I thought there was something that he kind of said that if you're the prosecution kind of bodes well for you as a second shooter when he says Eddie couldn't hit him 4 feet away.
Right.
And if he was able to help him commit assisted suicide and he's 4 feet away, how could he have shot Paul?
Right. Oh, yeah. So, well, that is interesting.
Yeah, that takes a leap of logic to be able to believe that the story was true. The story we're getting from Eddie and Alec is entirely truthful either way. And I think that gets into our jumping off point here about Eddie. Dick Harpootlian made the point today. Eddie Smith has told 6 different stories since he's been in custody or since he's been questioned about all of this. And Dick was basically salivating at the chance to get Eddie Smith on the stand to
he show said, please him, give me him. Let's cross examine him for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's got 6 stories I've heard so far. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what, isn't that exactly what Dick said? Yep. He was like, he comes up with a new tale every time I talk to him about this.
And that was, we were speculating last week, when are we going to get Eddie? And then the watershed moment, the real moment of realization today is when they put Agent Bernie from SLED, the forensic accountant, on the stand. And they stopped questioning him short of going into detail about where all Alec's money's going. Mm-hmm. And that's how you directly set up Eddie Smith. They've mentioned him in the DNA, but they don't really start talking about Eddie Smith until they talk about where all Alec's money was going. And they didn't ask him any further about that. So at that point, it was clear to me today, we're not getting Eddie Smith. And then at the end of the day, Dick Harpootlian tells us why. If the state doesn't want him up there, the defense would love to have him up there. That's...
Yes, yes. And
the defense can still call him, right?
Of course, but at this stage of trial, having seen the evidence, I don't know what he would add, right, relative to proving the state's case?
Unless he was directly involved with this somehow, which is to the question we were asked, Max, right? If he's directly involved, then the state has another issue on its hands.
Yeah, and refresh my memory, but we're now in this 4th week, right? But I can't remember a witness that's been up there where the defense has really been able to discredit, right?
Really go there. Well, except for today. Well, not discredit.
The hose one.
We didn't discredit Dale.
It was nullified, and to paint the scene here.
That was the only. That was literally the first time that I actually heard where the defense kind of took apart the state's whole.
They did. They did a really good job with that because they had this detailed testimony about the hose being put up a certain way.
Mm-hmm. And this is in the dog kennel, and we've been hearing about mm-hmm. this water
right.
nearby.
Right. And then the inference being that the killer quickly grabbed the hose and washed out blood, and Attorney Griffin was able to quickly point to a video.
The video that they've been using against.
Yeah, and it showed the hose on the ground. So the state should have either put that in themselves or not use this witness because I think it was just flat. It was a minor detail given the tremendous events of the day between the forensic pathologist and Marion Proctor, but it was a flat witness. But other than that witness, which was a short witness,
that was,
I think if you put Eddie Smith up there, as I understand what he would say, you could probably have 4 or 5 hours of vigorous, effective cross-examination. And we're getting towards the end of this case. I think the state would want to end this case on a strong note.
Right.
That's why I think the case agent, I would think, would be a really good ending witness. Slash, don't we have some more videos of the defendant?
So where did we land with that? I think I was going in to do my 6 o'clock package when all this was going down. But do we know exactly where we're landing right now with that recording, that third interview that we're hearing about? Isn't that what Agent Owens is going to be?
Creighton Waters was talking about a 15 to 30 minute, and Attorney Harpootling said it was over 30.
Under 30. He said it was more than 15, under 30. I think Creighton undersold it a little bit.
I see. Do we think this is the video when they came and gave their version explaining the roadside, and then they confronted him with the Snapchat?
You know, I don't know. I almost got the sense, because Dick and Jim were present, that this one was, because if I remember correctly, that third sled interview mm-hmm. was in August, around the time that Duffy Stone recused himself. Mm-hmm. This would have been another sled interview in September.
With the Snapchat picture being
August would have been Snapchat.
Well, that would be a strong way to end it.
And we haven't gotten that video yet, but I assume we likely will. But I think this other video, is more related to the financial crimes and the roadside shooting than it is to, and Eddie Smith, than it is to.
I see.
But I would expect to see both of those tomorrow, honestly.
Yes.
So there's a lot that we are expecting to see tomorrow.
Yeah, and I think
almost too much. Can you say too much?
I think we're looking into another day, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's a fair statement. Now we've talked about this, but there's puzzle pieces still around, and I am waiting for the state of South Carolina to pull it together some right before the end of their case, because there's some confusing, clearly incriminating circumstances out there. But I would think they would want to have one witness to wrap some of this more together before the fence kicks off their case.
Well, and we've got, so let's think about these dead ends before we go, They're loose ends. The loose ends that we're dealing with the state right now, for me, is the timeline. I need them to tie this timeline together and make it stick. I'm not there yet. As far as what they're trying to tell me, I need to hear more.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
What's your big sense?
Had the person from OnStar, right? The GM person. He just puts a CD into evidence, right? I'm assuming that's consistent with their timeline, but how do you tie that in?
Yeah, I mean, we literally had a witness that came from GM with the OnStar data. Very cool to have them here to hear that there's more OnStar data to look at, but none of us heard anything about it, which is fine.
Right.
But when do we get to hear about it?
I know. Who ties that in?
Why do you put it into evidence if you don't want to do something? Mm-hmm. What else? Timeline, what else is really sticking out to us?
The Gucci receipt, but I feel like that's low-hanging fruit. Maggie's engagement ring, getting more on, and we got more on it today with the little detective comment and the opioids and Alex's drug habits that had been a lingering issue.
Clothing is good for the state, but it's a little confusing, right?
The clothes. What are they going to do about
the T-shirt?
I think the jacket. They need to make clear what they intended say about the jacket. Like, what are they trying to? I think we know they're trying to insinuate that the jacket was used to conceal weapons or some other items that were present at the crime scene and got gunshot residue on them.
Right.
And that's why that blue jacket is important. Those are the main ones.
What is the exact time between the kennel video and the death? In the death of
about five minutes.
5 minutes.
Yep. They can. Someone please fact check me on this. I'm very very confident in it though. But I believe Creighton Waters in his opening statement said that Paul and Maggie's death occurred sometime right after 8:49 p.m. Mm-hmm. Around 8:50.
Now, does that create reasonable doubt for you if you're a juror? The 5 minute gap, so to speak.
No, not at all. There's no way, if I'm in a juror's shoes, that I can think that those murders happened in that same time frame, and that Alec somehow wasn't aware of the gunshots or a strange vehicle or strange people or something. It goes back to his alibi and saying telling everybody who'd listen who wasn't there and his. Plus, also, it's been so long ago, but remember his original alibi. I feel like in that first interview, first body camera video, or maybe that first interview, he gave a timeline way longer for how long he was away from that house than what it ended up being.
Right. Yeah.
I can't wait to hear how the defense is going to get him out of this kennel video, the one where we hear his voice. We now just had Miriam Proctor, her husband, Bart, once again, verify that that's Alec's voice on there. They want this to be locked down. So obviously the defense just has to go with it at this point.
Yeah, let me throw something out from a legal standpoint, which has been in my head for a couple of days now. If the defense puts up the possibility of another person being involved with killing Maggie and Paul, but you also think as a juror, well, that may be correct, but I know that Alec directed it. There's a legal concept in South Carolina called hand of one, hand of all. And in cases in which there is proof of someone else being involved, but you're also involved with it equally, you ask the judge for that charge. Now, if I'm prosecuting this case, I don't know if I'd ask for that because that may cut against my thesis of the case in which he's the lone gunman. But that may be a distinct possibility once the evidence all ends. They may, I don't know, we'll have to see.
Can they do that? Can they change what they're asking?
Well, it's...
Can they go in with that?
You can if the evidence supports a hand of one, hand of all charge, and I don't think that evidence is there yet, but I'm positing that the defense will come forward with some credible evidence. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying they will,
that's
but if there's something credible that shows that someone else could be involved, I think a reasonable juror could easily believe, wait a minute, now there's no way that person could have done it without Alec either hiring them or being directly involved, hand of one, hand of all. So do they ask for that? We'll have to wait and see if we get that far.
That's fascinating. Well, we've got a whole nother day ahead. Oh, wait, but Drew's got one more thought.
Just one that has been on my mind since early on in the episode. Early on in the episode, talking about Maggie, I'm sorry, Miriam Proctor, Maggie's sister. She said, and she was talking about how Alec was focused on clearing Paul's name in the boat case. Mm-hmm. That wasn't new ground. Mm-hmm. You got to remember back to last week, Paul's friend, Nathan Tootin, mm-hmm. said the same thing. He shuttled Alec to the airport one day in July. And he specifically recalls Alec telling him, I want to clear Paul's name. We're going to do this. Is two witnesses proving state of mind.
Yeah.
Right.
And not looking for the killers.
Well, for sure. But, you know, in defense came back pretty strong. I think they're swinging with this as well. They're saying, well, didn't Maggie say that she didn't think Paul was driving the boat?
Oh, yeah.
Which I thought was fascinating. That was what Marion testified to, that Maggie didn't think Paul was driving the boat, and that this had always been a very big thing for her. Now, I could see the defense sort of obsessing over this point and saying that he was not in his mind, he wasn't in his right mind, and he was thinking this was the only way he could make things right, was to do what Maggie always wanted, which was to make her boy clear of these charges, basically. Wow. Yeah. So I'm just kind of coming in from like left field on
that
a little bit,
but I could see
I could see defense really playing this part.
The state has a fertile field for Alec's state of mind on the other side.
Sure.
And the actions of a grieving person.
I mean, look at him. He's lost 100 pounds.
And yes. To your point just now, what did Blanca say he told her? Go fix up the house like Maggie liked it.
Yep.
Was it?
Like a denial almost that she was gone.
Yeah. And what was it? Was it an act or was it? And that's what we're getting all down to. We got to go.
Yeah.
But that's.
It's just something to think about for as we go into this, because we will be wrapping prosecution, getting into defense at some point, and we will start hearing about this. So we will have more for you tomorrow. Thank you so much for joining us on Unsolved South Carolina, the Murdoch Murders, Money and Mystery. We are going to be here for you guys all the way through this trial. We'll see you tomorrow. Thank you so much, and thank you for all
My
of
pleasure.
Your
Thanks,
input today. Yeah. Thanks, Max.
Thank you.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.